Ring out the old year, ring in the new, ring a ding ding.
Merry New Year!
It was at her New Year's party that I found out how she felt about me.
I'm sorry, Harry. I know it's New Year's Eve. I know you're feeling lonely, but you just can't show up here, tell me you love me, and expect that to make everything all right.
Hi, everybody. Happy New Year. This is The Takeaway. I'm WNYC's Sean Carlson in for Tanzina Vega. We cannot end 2019 without looking back at the year in movies. And 2019 saw some of the biggest franchises of all time draw to a close, at least temporarily.
What are you doing there, 3PO?
Taking one last look, sir, at my friends.
Avengers!
And this year, Hollywood also spent hundreds of millions of dollars on special effects. Everything from de-aging Robert De Niro to straight up turning humans into cats.
Because Jellicles can, and Jellicles do.
Jellicles do, and Jellicles can.
Jellicles can, and Jellicles do.
I have to say, I've never started a segment to cats before. It's a new one for me. With us now in the studio to talk about some overlooked highs and a few lows in 2019 movies is Rafer Guzman. He's film critic at Newsday and for us here at The Takeaway. Hey, Rafer.
Hey, Sean.
Okay, so first off, the good news. Tell us about a few things you liked this year that went under the radar.
Well, one of the ones I'd like to talk about is a documentary, a music documentary called Everybody's Everything, about Lil Peep, a rapper that I don't think many of us knew until he died at a very young age, 21, in 2017. And he made headlines in the trade publications and Rolling Stone and such and Pitchfork. And people, I think, were scratching their head going, who was this guy? He was a SoundCloud rapper. He was a guy who had built this grassroots network just by putting his tracks up on SoundCloud and was in the process of becoming a rapper. Rising star when he died of an opioid overdose at the age of 21.
Here's some context for the movie. Here's Lil Peep's mom speaking about her son in the movie.
He's trying to do this work and Emma kind of brings him out of it and he's making progress and getting better at it and meeting people online and doing the stuff and on his own and probably so much of it unbeknownst to me except for the fact that every night I heard him singing. You know, he worked while I slept, but I heard him. And so this was made me happy because he was doing something that he enjoyed and was committed to.
And as you mentioned, Lil Peep had a major online following, but a very short career. How does the documentary tell the story?
Well, one way it does that is, you know, we're talking about a generation here that films absolutely everything. So what you have is a lot of this fan footage and a lot of footage from one of his video directors who was accompanying him for a lot of his career on tour. And it's just fascinating to see this immediate footage of this kid who is, you know, got no record label, got no real management team, no PR. And he's over in Russia playing to sold out crowds of 3,000 kids, some of whom met him on the plane, found out that when his plane was arriving and went to see him. And you really do begin to get this sense that he wasn't just this kind of underground phenomenon. He really might have been the next huge thing.
And Rafer, you've got one more documentary for people to check out. It's called Maiden, and this one's about the first all-female team to sail around the world in the Whitbread Round the World race back in 1989.
Town Quay, Southampton, 7 a.m., and the dawn of the fifth Round the World race.
To actually wake up that morning and think, okay, today we have to set off and sail around the world, is a little bit of a daunting morning.
If you're not on edge already, you are at that point.
Welcome to the Solent, where we're only minutes away from one of the most spectacular sights in sport, the start of the Whitbread Round the World race.
So what stood out to you about this documentary?
First of all, just on its own, it's a great sort of underdog story, you know, great ocean adventure, you know, this young crew alone on a boat, literally sailing around the world. And that makes for, a kind of a great gripping narrative. But the real battle for these women, I think, takes place whenever they come into port and they are on land and they have to deal with this just incredible amount of sexism. Nobody would take them seriously. We don't think of 1989 being that long long ago.
Right.
But when you look back at the media clips, the television interviews, the newspaper articles, these nasty editorial cartoons making fun of them, even when they're winning, yeah. they continue to mock these women, you realize just what they were really up against. So it just makes for a great kind of instructional and also really fun kind of underdog story. And it's a great little movie that didn't get the release that it should have.
So next up, let's move on to Burn Your Maps. It stars Jacob Tremblay. He's a child actor, and people might know him from the movie Room that came out. And he plays a suburban American kid who thinks he's a Mongolian goat herder born in the wrong place.
Hello, my name is Wes, and I'm here today to represent the wandering nomads of Mongolia.
What did he say?
These are Sindak and Altai, my goats. My people weren't just Mongolian. We were shepherds.
I think it's pretty fair to say that it's a wild concept for a movie. What worked about it for you?
Well, you know, I saw this at the Hamptons Film Festival. It's almost 5 years ago now, and I was really charmed by it. You know, you've got Jacob Tremblay. Vera Farmiga plays his mom, so you've got this great cast, and Tremblay was just fresh off this all his praise for The Room, the movie. And, you know, the idea that you've got this kid who he's got an identity problem, right? He's got an identity issue here. It's not sexuality. It's not gender. It's this oddball thing. He thoroughly believes he's a Mongolian goat herder. He walks around the neighborhood with little stuffed goats he's made, goes to school in traditional garb. And the question becomes for the mom, how far is she going to go to support this kid and help him be the thing that he wants to be, as outlandish as it may seem to her? And it struck me as this really great, non-threatening, almost non-topical in a good way, way to wrap your head around this issue of identity and what you as a parent, you know, what you're going to do for your child. And I thought it was really charming and wonderful. I don't know why it never got a release. I don't know what the backstory is there, but it really languished for years and years. It only came out this year. Again, played a very small release in theaters, but it is on demand. You can rent it, and it was one of my favorite films of five years ago. And I think it still holds up, and it's just a lovely little movie.
Okay, Rafer, let's get down to brass tacks here. You mentioned a few underseen movies of the year, but I think it's fair to say that not everything that came out this year was really worth watching. This kills me because I wanted it to be good. But if we're talking about the worst movies of the year, we kind of have to talk about Cats, right?
We do have to talk about Cats. You're one of the few people that wanted to see it, I guess.
I still do. I haven't seen it yet.
I think you should be prepared for a hallucinatory, strangely sexualized, uncanny valley musical with people who are sort of digitally coated in fur, slinking around. A lot of Broadway, a lot of singing, a lot of jazz hands in this movie. and I guess, Sean, if that's going to float your boat, then, you know,
great. I love jazz hands.
Great for you. You may be one of the few people that will come out, you know, trumpeting this film. It's just such a bizarre and strange film. And the reviews have just been abysmal. And I have to say, I give it 1.5 stars out of 4.
Wow.
And I think that was actually one of the kinder reviews that it got.
Wow. We have a couple moments here. So we want to go to another movie you weren't a fan of. It was Rambo Last Blood. It was the final installment in Sylvester Stallone's Rambo franchise. And you said this movie is, quote, we're quoting you, truly bizarre. Why is it so bad? Why was it so bad?
Well, I know that we all expect Rambo films to be violent, but this film really just went over the top. It actually has almost literally nothing to offer except violence. I think the finale of the film, 20 minutes worth of just nonstop carnage. There are people whose heads are being trisected. Minor spoiler, he threatens to rip a man's heart out and in the end actually does. I just think this film just really went just completely over the top. It's this insane finale to the Rambo series, and I don't mean that in a good way.
All right, real quick, as we end here, is a palate cleanser for you. What are you looking forward to in 2020?
There are a few things I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to No Time to Die, supposedly the last Bond film to star Daniel Craig, who I've loved as Bond, and apparently he's hated being in the role, but I've been thinking he's great. I'm really looking forward to Wonder Woman 1984, if for no other reason than it has New Order's Blue Monday as the theme song. That's guaranteed to get a good review from me anytime. And also Dune, Denis Villeneuve.
Yes.
Redoing David Lynch's Dune. And that's going to be something to see one way or another. Who knows? But I'm looking forward to that.
Rafer Guzman is film critic at Newsday and here at The Takeaway. Thanks so much, Rafer.
Thanks, Sean.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.